It's our crest, our coat of arms, and what it means to wear it.
Binsky will take it, tap it ahead for Nudibara, out to the neutral zone, finding Foligno.
It's when we dig deep.
Foligno's got help on the rush.
At the right moment.
And he drops it back for Dubinsky, over to Savard. He shoots and scores!
It's our blue, and out of our blue, we rise.
Head to BlueJackets.com for tickets, news, and more.
Now, the Buckeye Extra Podcast with Rob Aller, Bill Rabinowitz, and Joey Kaufman from the Columbus Dispatch.
The Buckeye Extra Podcast is brought to you by Rosati Windows, Central Ohio's number one replacement window company. Hello, everyone. It's February 19th. Thanks for listening to our latest episode, the podcast, for downloading, subscribing. We do not have an official groundhog of the podcast, but if there was a groundhog and it looked out to take its shadow, we would be a few weeks away from spring, because next week is the NFL scouting combine, sign that the NFL draft is creeping a little closer, and then in 2 weeks we have spring football practice. So by our gauge, it's getting a little closer to spring. Two big events on the calendar. We will get into some spring practice preview stuff as it gets a little closer to the first week of March, which is when the Buckeyes are back on the practice field. Next week, both Bill Rabinowitz and I will be in Indianapolis for the NFL Draft Combine. This is, by the way, Joey Kaufman from the Dispatch coming to you. I realize I didn't say my name yet, but Bill and I will both be in Indianapolis next week for the Combine. And on this week's episode, we speak with Dane Brugler from The Athletic. He's a draft analyst for the website that covers the NFL Draft. You can read his work at The Athletic, and you can also follow him on Twitter. Let me get his handle right. It's DP Brugler, B-R-U-G-L-E-R. You can follow him for lots of draft insight. He's based in Northeast Ohio, so he follows Ohio State football pretty closely and has lots of insight on the Buckeyes draft prospects. About 11 guys will be in Indianapolis next week for the Combine. Chase Young, Jeff Okuda, J.K. Dobbins, the big names. But you got lots of other guys who'll be there as well, from Damon Arnett to Jordan Fuller, Devon Hamilton, Malik Harrison, K.J. Hill, Jonah Jackson, Austin Mack, Ben Victor, and Damon Arnett. I think I got everybody there. But Dane talks about a lot of those guys, particularly Damon Arnett, who sounds like among the draft prospects has the most, of all the guys there, he can gain the most at the Combine this week. So he's somebody to watch other than maybe the headliners that you're familiar with. So hope you enjoy the interview with Dane, and we'll hear a brief word from our sponsor, and then we'll get right into it.
When shopping for a window company, beware that a lot of companies claim to be factory direct. Do your research to see how accurate that claim really is, and consider shopping Rosati Windows, because they've been factory direct since day one. You see, being factory direct enables Rosati Windows to offer a product that is equal, if not superior, to most other products on the market, and without franchise markups or shipping costs. That's why Rosati Windows offers one price. It's their best price, and it's a fair price.
And we're joined by Dane Brugler. He covers the NFL draft for The Athletic, has covered the NFL draft for quite a long time, and is here to break down the OSU players at the Combine next week. Dane, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. It's hard to believe Combine is here already, but it's one of the most important steps of the draft process. And this year is going to be a little different with things moving into prime time. And so there are going to have to be some adjustments, but it's still the most important step of the draft process for various reasons. But a big week coming up here in Indianapolis.
Yeah, it's always a big week for a lot of guys. And Ohio State obviously has a lot of names who are going to be there in Indianapolis. And everybody knows about Chase Young, Jeff Okuda, and it seems like their performance at the Combine is not going to have maybe the biggest influence on their draft stock. Chase Young's going to go number two, somewhere in the top three, certainly. It seems like Jeff Okuda won't be long behind Tim. But, I mean, there are 11 guys from Ohio State at the Combine. Besides maybe Chase Young or Jeff Okuda, who among those group of Buckeyes do you think can help themselves out the most during the Combine, and how they run and lift and that sort of thing?
Well, I think first and foremost, I think we have to remember why the Combine exists. It's not the 40-yard dash. It's not, any of these drills. It's really the medicals and the interview process. And so first and foremost, hopefully, Chase Young and Okuda, the medicals go well. There's nothing that's, one of them's not dealing with a lingering hip injury or, a knee that they played through throughout their season. Even though they didn't miss games, due to injury, there wasn't something that they were fighting through that could be a long-term issue. So first and foremost, that's what you hope for. You know, a lot of teams will use a 1-5 system. And when it comes to the medicals, one being, you know, clean bill of health. That's what you hope for from a player. But sometimes these doctors, team doctors, they have to deliver 4s and 5s. And if that's the case, as a GM, you have to take them off your board. And so you just hope for the best and hope you're getting 1s, 2s, or even 3s are okay, and you're avoiding those 4s and 5s. And then the second thing is the interview process. And that's where a guy like Damon Arnette, that's where he really needs to shine and kind of change the narrative a little bit. You know, he is a guy that, you know, has some maturity concerns with NFL teams. You know, they've cited certain things they've been told at Ohio State. They've cited things to me, just their interactions with him from different players, just things that they worry about, maturity-wise, off-field decision-making. There's just certain things with Arnette that, even though, you know, I've heard from, I mentioned something on Twitter about him, I've heard from Ohio State fans, well, he didn't get suspended, he didn't get arrested. That's not always what it's about. It's just, as an NFL team, if you're investing, especially a top 50 draft pick in these guys, you have to trust them. You have to feel totally confident in who they are as people and players, that they can represent your team. And, you know, with a guy like Damon Arnette, there are several teams that are not on board with who he is. And so during the interview process is something where he can maybe flip that narrative a little bit and prove that, hey, you know, I am someone you can rely on. I am someone you can trust. And it's something that's going to be really important, more so than what he runs in the 40 or anything like that. How he interviews is going to be crucial for Damon Arnette in terms of being drafted. Because, again, he's going to get drafted, but he's in a crowded cornerback group. You know, Jeffrey Okuda is going to be the first cornerback drafted. But then after that, it's really a crowded group at the cornerback rankings. You've got guys like C.J. Henderson and Trevon Diggs and Gladney from TCU and Fulton from LSU and Jalen Johnson from Utah, Cam Dantz from Mississippi State. Arnette's somewhere in there. And if there are still these lingering questions about maturity, he's going to fall to the end of that tier of that group of corners instead of being near the top, you know, because his talent, his on-field talent says he's a top 40 guy, but he might not be drafted that high if the team is not comfortable after they interview him.
You mentioned some of the stuff with Damon. Is that stuff where he's trash-talking on the field? Is it the off the field and conditioning and workout stuff? Can you maybe delve into that a little more, what you're hearing from teams?
Yes, it's mostly just comes down to maturity. And, you know, part of it, yeah, you know, the on-field stuff, there is a fine line between being that fiery competitor and then just being a little, you know, emotionally immature. I mean, there is a fine line there in terms of, you know, sacrificing, making the play or, you know, making it about you and getting a penalty, things like that. Some of that's okay. I mean, especially at the corner position, you want that brash, cocky demeanor if you're a corner. You know, you want a guy that thinks he can win every single rep, who can quickly forget mistakes, move on, still have the confidence to think he's the best guy out there. So that's okay. That's what you're looking for at the position. But it's more about the off-field stuff and being able to trust him, that he's going to be a good teammate, that he's going to do all the right things in the building and then outside the building. And that's not something that teams are totally on board with Arnette just yet. And again, that stems from things that teams have been told from Ohio State, that stems from their personal interaction with teams or with players, his former teammates, or people he's working out with have told them. So, you know, it's more just one or two things. And listen, I have nothing to gain from me saying this without being told this directly from multiple teams. So, you know, trust me, this is not something where, you know, I'm trying to put out bad information about a player, because on tape, I love him. I think he's a very underrated player. I think he's one of the best tackling corners in this draft, and I think he's a good enough athlete where he can start in the NFL and do a really nice job in coverage against NFL wide receivers. So I see a guy that's a starter who I think ideally I put him in a slot, because I think he can hold up there. He's a really good tackler. He can hold up in coverage. And he's a guy that should have a long career. But again, maturity concerns are something that will affect his draft grade.
He seemed to really benefit from returning for a senior season, and that seems to be kind of a theme for this class, at least, where you have a lot of guys who maybe could have gone pro after their junior season, and instead you have really 8 of these 11 guys are seniors, upperclassmen who stayed throughout their careers. Did he help himself the most by staying out of those guys?
Oh, no question. I think he is, you know, because
he could have been undrafted possibly a year ago.
Well, and everybody I talked to said he wanted to go. Like, he had one foot out the door after the Rose Bowl. Like, he was ready to go and, you know, be in the NFL because, you know, he was a fourth-year junior. So, you know, he put in his 4 years. And so he was ready to go pro. But, you know, he had and that was a sign of maturity that he came back to school, because he comes back and you hear all these glowing things about how he's more locked in, he's more focused, and, you know, you hoped it would shine through the whole year, but unfortunately that's not the feedback I got. He definitely helped himself by coming back to school. On the field, he was much more consistent, and we also had to factor in that with, you know, Okuda and Sean Wade on the same field, Arnett saw his share of targets thrown his way, and he held up very well. He did a really nice job. I said this back in the fall. I said Ohio State had a really good chance to have 3 corners drafted in the top 40 picks. And while Sean Wade decided to go back to school, which I thought he was going to be somewhere in that late first round mix, and then Arnett, again, I think the talent's there, but then the more I dug into, you know, the character concerns, it's hard to figure out where he is, because you know, different teams have different appetites for risk. You know, the two teams that I know had strong concerns that I talked to, and there's a third one that was not as strong but still voiced some concerns, you know, they might not have a strong appetite for risk, where another team might have that appetite and have no problem drafting him at pick, you know, somewhere in the early 30s. So it's just it's so tough this time of year when you're getting this information and you're trying to, you know, figure out exactly how different teams view him. And, you know, because there's rarely a consensus on these guys. The interviews will go different ways for different teams. Like I said, different teams have different appetites for risk and what they're looking for with the makeup of their team, you know, what fits in their locker room, the personalities, things like that. So, you know, it's not he's going to be off 32 boards, nothing like that. It's just he has some work to do at the combine, just in terms of flipping the narrative a little bit, making sure teams are, you know, they don't have to love him. They just have to be comfortable with him, especially when you're talking about a top 50 draft pick.
Hi, Dane. It's Bill Rabinowitz. Thanks for joining the podcast. We appreciate it.
Hey, Bill.
I did the game day cover story on Arnett, talked to his dad, talked to him at length, and yeah, there's no question that he agreed that he was immature early in his career. Basically, what you're saying is your concerns or team's concerns have not been allayed completely by the improvement last year.
Yeah, I think he certainly helped himself. There's no question. But there are still those lingering concerns, and part of it is we're talking about a top 50 pick here. You know, it's a big investment. Especially, like I mentioned, in this cornerback class, that there's a lot of names. After Okuda, there is a logjam of names in that mix of talented corners who are going to be somewhere in that, you know, the back half of round one into the front half of round two. And Arnett's in there somewhere. It's just a matter of, you know, where does he fit and, you know, where does he stack up with these other guys? And being able to trust him off the field is a big part of that. That's something that could separate him from some of these other names. And that's where, there are several teams I talked to that just they're not convinced yet. And maybe that's something that he can, like I said, flip the narrative at the combine. And that's why these interviews are so important. And it isn't something where I think he's going to be undraftable or anything like that. It's just there are those lingering concerns that he's going to have some work to do at the combine.
How much did he help himself last year in terms of just proving that his toughness, first of all, and also that he's a team guy, that he played basically all year with a broken wrist?
Yeah, he did. And I think he's one of the better tackling corners that I have scouted the last 3 or 4 years. So toughness, especially playing with that wrist injury, you know, wearing a cast, no question about the toughness. And so I think that is definitely in his favor. And so it just comes down to, you know, because you have to trust him, you know, away from the facility. You have to trust him being around, you know, the other players in the locker room and just being comfortable with who he is. And, you know, as long as you are, then, you know, he's going to be highly graded in this draft. It's just a matter of him convincing teams that he is. And so for some of these teams, the combine, because he was not at the Senior Bowl. So the combine will be the first time he gets that first face-to-face interaction with some GMs, with some coaches. You know, a lot of scouts have gone through Columbus, obviously, and, you know, have talked with Arnett. But, you know, maybe not, you know, all the GMs or the, you know, directors of player personnel or especially the head coaches who are, you know, busy coaching in the fall and not on the road. So the combine will kind of be their first impression. And we know how important those first impressions are in terms of, you know, selling yourself and showing what you're all about and answering some of these tough questions, because they don't hold back. You know, they're going to, you know, ask him about, you know, how much he likes to party, you know, how, you know, when's the last time you were drunk, or, you know, just random things that are going to test, you know, these players. And, you know, just talk about, tell me, you know, the, yeah, an example of when you were, you know, you were a teammate, or, you know, that showed how much of a teammate you are, and just different things. These teams know the right buttons to push to try to, you know, get these guys thinking and try to get the right answers. And so it's an opportunity for him to flip the narrative a little bit and just show that, hey, you can trust me and you should draft me in the top 50 picks.
I also want to ask you about another Ohio State defensive back who I'm sure there are no character questions about. But questions about where he fits in the NFL. That's Jordan Fuller. Can you give me your kind of analysis on him?
Yeah, and that's you set it up exactly right. Talking to just people about him, they love the character. They love who he is, how he represents himself. You know, he's that extra coach on the field. Now, you know, he played in the secondary, obviously, with three super talented corners, and he was kind of the fourth guy. And he's not on that level, obviously. He's more of that mid to late round safety, a guy who I think is going to have to prove that he can hang on special teams to you know, carve out a long career. But he is exactly what the teams are looking for in the locker room, a guy that's going to give you everything he has in practice. He's going to be at the meetings. He's going to you know, be a very strong representation of your football team. But it'll be important for him at the combine to run well, to work out well, and that'll give teams just kind of a look of, okay, well, you know, we know he has the toughness. Well, does he have enough speed that we're looking for in special teams and things like that? So running well, performing well at the combine will be important for him to, you know, lock in a spot on day three.
And I'm assuming you have basically very few questions about Jeffrey Okuda as a player or as a guy.
Yeah, it's if you're going to drop a corner, I mean, similar to Chase Young, if you're going to drop up an edge rusher, it's going to look something like Chase Young. If you're going to drop a corner, it looks like Jeffrey Okuda with his height, his length. I mean, you think about all the talented corners that have been through Ohio State, and he was the first unanimous All-American corner in Ohio State history. I mean, that's certainly saying something, but more so than just, you know, the accolades and all that. Watching him on tape, his feet, his awareness, ball skills, I mean, it's all there for him to, you know, develop into a top-tier corner in the NFL. He needs to get a little bit stronger. You know, there are some times where he needs to clean up some things in the run game, just be a more consistent tackler. But he's only a one-year starter. You know, he saw plenty of reps as a sophomore, but most of those coming off the bench. So only 1 year as a starter. So those are the nitpicks that we'll be talking about with Jeffrey Okuda. But yeah, the guy is going to be somewhere in the top 10 picks. I think the biggest question will be, you know, who's going to be that first defensive player drafted after Chase Young? Is it going to be Isaiah Simmons from Clemson? Will it be Derrick Brown from Auburn? I think Jeffrey Okuda, he might be the favorite to be that first defensive player drafted after Young, which, you know, pretty impressive if the first two defensive players drafted are both Buckeyes. That says quite a bit.
It might lean, as you mentioned, a little more in the nitpicking category, Dane, as far as Jeff Okuda earlier in his college career, more of a rotational player, didn't start full-time until last season, 2019. Will that give any teams pause, do you think, just in terms of the volume of tape maybe not being there for Jeff Okuda compared to, say, Isaiah Simmons or some of those other defensive players?
It's not ideal. I mean, obviously, you'd rather have a three-year starter and, you know, tons of tape to look at, but I mean, I'm talking to scouts over the summer. I mean, they were raving about Okuda. And you throw on the tape from the Big Ten Championship game in 2018 against Northwestern, or the Rose Bowl and how he performed against Washington. I mean, those two tapes right there from 2018 show showed that he was going to be a first-round pick and a high first-round pick. So teams were excited about his tape over the summer before he was even a starter. And so I think while it is not ideal to be a one-year starter, it's not going to stop a team from drafting him very high in this draft.
We probably could go on for hours talking about all 11 of these guys in detail, but I won't subject you or anybody else to doing that. But some of the other guys we haven't talked about, from J.K. Dobbins, Devon Hamilton, Malik Harrison, K.J. Hill, Jonah Jackson, which of those guys are you interested in seeing how they go through the combine stuff, the feedback they get from teams, from their interviews, medicals, workouts? Who do you think this week is particularly important besides some of the guys maybe we've talked about so far?
I'm eager to see Malik Harrison. You know, we know how, he's an impressive athlete, being a former high school quarterback and, you know, being a guy that was dunking a basketball and, as a freshman in high school and things like that. We know that he has some of the splash athleticism, but just seeing him hold up, I think he's very good in a straight line. So I think his 40-yard dash should represent that. But seeing him, turn his hips and, consistently, how does he do in the three-cone drill? How does he do in some of these positional stuff where he's going to be asked to move in reverse and flip his hips and show the change of direction? So there are some times where you watch him, and he's got high hips, and so he's long-legged. And so there are some times where he looks a little stiff when he's changing directions, but he still is such a good athlete that he gets away with it. And so I'm really interested to look at Malik Harrison, see how he holds himself during some of these drills. You're right. We could go through so many of these players. I think K.J. Hill, he is a strong possession guy. How fast is he? How is he going to do? And I think he's got some short area burst to him, but he's not, Terry McLaurin, who ran a 4.3 last year's combine. He's not gonna do that. But just how fast is he? Is he a 4.4 athlete? Or is he a 4.5 athlete? And, that's something, I mentioned how Damon Arnette and the crowded cornerback group, this wide receiver class is just loaded with guys. And if K.J. Hill comes out and, maybe doesn't have the best 40-yard dash time, say he runs a 4.56, well, maybe that pushes him below some of these other wide receivers where it's such a loaded group that it's something as maybe like the 40-yard dash could be the difference for some of these teams about how they stack these guys. Now, if K.J. Hill comes out and runs, 4.46, then all of a sudden maybe he's moving up ahead of some guys. So I think the 40-yard dash, whether it should or it shouldn't, I think it will matter for a player like Hill, because when you look at the wide receiver position, you look at the corner position, those are stopwatch positions. And so teams are looking for speed at those two positions, and that's where a guy like K.J. Hill could help himself. J.K. Dobbins, I think, is going to test really well. I am interested to see the 40-yard dash, because there are times where he did get caught from behind on tape. I'm not sure that necessarily the long speed is there. I know some of his 40-yard dash times from high school were, ridiculous. I'm eager to see is it going to be closer to those times that we've seen from high school, or is it going to be closer to the times you saw on tape where we saw guys either closing the gap or actually catching him from behind in terms of that long speed? So that'll be something to pay attention to. I'm looking for Devon Hamilton, the nose tackle. Can he continue that momentum that, I wrote back in October how he was moving himself into top 100 territory, and he has not made me look wrong. I think the way he played down the stretch, the way he played at the Senior Bowl, he's in the top 100 in terms of being a draft pick, which never would have thought that over the summer. He just hadn't seen that level of play. But when I watched his tape from September, early October, I saw a guy that was pushing the pocket, who was playing with some movement skills, playing inspired, playing with more instincts. So that's the type of player at nose tackle that's going to go high. And so as long as he performs well at the combine and kind of, because the combine is one big cross-checking exercise. You want to make sure that, you're kind of checking the boxes with what you saw on tape and what you saw at the Senior Bowl. And so as long as Devon Hamilton does that, I think he's going to secure his spot as being a top 100 draft pick, top three-round player in this draft.
Yeah, it's probably early to really forecast too much stuff. we're 2 months out from the actual draft being held, but do you see it conceivable in any way that Devon Hamilton almost could be the fourth Ohio State guy picked after Chase Young, Jeff Okuda, J.K. Dobbins, then Devon Hamilton is the next guy?
Yeah, I think that's certainly possible. So, yeah, let's say that, you know, Young's one.
Because that would be quite a rise.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no question. And then, yeah, I think Dobbins being three, that makes sense. And then, yeah, who's going to be that fourth Ohio State player drafted? I think, yeah, you're debating between Arnett. Malik Harrison's going to be right there on day two. And then Devon Hamilton. I mean, if I'm a betting man, I'm probably going to lean more towards Arnett or Harrison than Hamilton, but he's going to be right there in that mix. There's no question about it. With the senior year that he had, the way he performed at the Senior Bowl, and you know, he's a guy that should test well, you know, especially with the bench press and some of, because he moves pretty well for a guy that size. So yeah, I think he's put himself at least in the conversation to be a top five player from Ohio State this year.
We'll kind of finish off here, circle back on the top level guy, obviously that being Chase Young. And it seems at this point in time, the consensus has really built up that Joe Burrow will be the number one overall pick of the Cincinnati Bengals. And there was a time, and I think even on your board, you have Chase Young as the best non-quarterback draft prospect. And is there any conceivable way that he would challenge Joe Burrow at all to be the number one pick?
I don't think so. Unless it comes out that Joe Burrow, has some secret, path that we don't know about, or some unforeseen thing that we just don't know about at this point. I just don't see it. Quarterback, as good as Chase Young is, the quarterback just impacts the game, and it's just at a different level. And so that alone is going to have Chase Young be the second guy off the board, and who knows? I mean, I think the Redskins, as long as if Tua is healthy, the Redskins are going to get calls about a team, say the Dolphins, moving up to two to possibly go get. The Dolphins are worried about the Chargers at six going up to number two. Maybe the Dolphins try to preempt them and go up to number two to give, and then the Redskins have a tough decision to make. Do we take the the future Pro Bowl pass rusher staring us right in the face? Or do we take the collection of draft picks that were being offered, quality over quantity, that type of thing? And so it wouldn't be surprised if one of these teams forces the Redskins to make a hard decision. And if that's the case, who knows? Maybe if that's the case, the Lions are sitting there at three, just giddy, right, never thinking that Chase Young would fall to them. So Chase Young's probably going to go two or three. With Burrow going one, and it's hard to see anything happening between now and the draft that changes that.
Yeah, I just find it a little interesting because I wonder if over the next 2 months, does Joe Burrow get more scrutiny? Do more teams, I don't have pause about where he was a year ago, and how much of this is one season, and then maybe the Bengals go what the Browns did 2 years ago, where you take maybe more of a surefire defensive end prospect and punt on drafting a quarterback for another year, but I guess you're saying is that's really not in the cards at all at this stage of the game.
Well, you can never say never. I mean, and listen, we're talking about the Bengals. The Bengals do their own thing, so you can never say never. Their ownership, the Brown family, they will do their own thing and trust their own people, and they don't like to do a lot of trading, and so I don't think they're going to trade out of there, but. Yeah, you just never know. And I think the fact that what we saw with Andy Dalton down the stretch, the fact that he was benched, and it seemed like his best days are behind him, the fact that the Bengals need a quarterback, the fact that Joe Burrow had arguably the best season ever from a college player at the position, and it shouldn't be a driving reason, but it doesn't hurt that he's from close by at least, so he knows that part of the country, and that certainly doesn't hurt. But it would be a very, very big surprise if Joe Burrow is not drafted number one overall. And I know there's a lot of questions right now about does Joe Burrow have leverage, and should he try to do something else and all that. But it would be a complete shock, from the outside, from the inside, based off of what NFL teams are thinking right now. It would be a complete shock if Joe Burrow is not the first pick.
How do you see Joe Burrow, obviously, who played at Ohio State, how do you see Joe compared to other Ohio State quarterback draft prospects of recent years. Last year, Dwayne Haskins came out. Next year, Justin Fields will come out. Where does Joe Burrow fit among those guys and quarterback prospects at large?
Burrow, he's not as physically impressive as those guys. I mean, Haskins obviously had the size and he had a strong arm. And so it's no surprise that Haskins outplayed Burrow in a practice setting because he's just so much more physically impressive. But Burrow, what makes him such a big-time performer is just the poise, the confidence that he shows, and then his accuracy really developed this year, this past year as a redshirt senior. So, you know, it's just one of those things where quarterbacks develop at their own pace, and, you know, I think when we look back at his first year at LSU, you know, it took a little bit of time to get used to a new team, you know, a new coaching staff, new play calling, chemistry with his offensive line, with his backs, with his pass catchers. Those things take time. And if you looked at him down the stretch, I mean, he was playing at a high level. He was the Fiesta Bowl MVP at the end of his junior season. So I don't think anybody saw this coming, you know, the Heisman season that he put together. But he was trending in this direction, and then he put it all together at the right time. And I think that, you know, he is a guy that it's a mental game playing the quarterback position. It's very much an intangible position, and so he's already shown that he can do that at a high level, where, you know, Justin Fields has so much talent. It's ridiculous how natural things come to for him at the position. But he still has growing to do in terms of some of his decision-making and seeing things quicker and making those pre-snap reads to understand where to go with the football. And, you know he's a good athlete, but not taking some of those tough hits and maneuvering better in the pocket. So just from a polish perspective, Joe Burrow's there, where Dwayne Haskins wasn't there as a redshirt sophomore. And Justin Fields, I think, you know, his first year as a starter, he certainly was one of the best quarterbacks in the nation. I'm excited. I can't wait to study him over the summer. And I have no doubt he's going to be one of my top-ranked players in the 2021 class. But, you know, he doesn't have the polish that a Joe Burrow has shown at this point.
Yeah, I looped Justin Fields in there mostly because teams, I imagine, if they're going to pick a quarterback last year, if they pick a quarterback this year, they have to look ahead to next year and see Justin Fields possibly coming out or likely coming out, and Trevor Lawrence as well. So they have to make their decision this year, looking ahead to next year.
Yeah, no, that's definitely part of it. You know, in terms of making the investment, teams that need a quarterback, I think the Miami Dolphins are going to be, we know they're in full rebuild mode. And so, you know, they're picking fifth. So they likely won't have a shot at Joe Burrow. Do they trade assets to go get Tua, who has injury questions? What does Justin Herbert do for them? I mean, we're going to hear so many rumors and so many, you know, the Dolphins love Herbert. You know, the Chargers, they're moving up for Tua. We're going to hear so many different rumors between now and draft day that it's going to drive us nuts, just like, you know, every draft cycle. But looking forward to next year is certainly part of the equation for these teams. In terms of, you know, do they pull the trigger now or maybe they wait? And, you know, looking at Trevor Lawrence and Justin Fields and the classic quarterback next year, maybe it would pay off in the long run to wait and do it that way. So teams are going to have important quarterback decisions here coming up. And when you look at the top of the draft, the Bengals, the Dolphins, the Chargers, the Panthers are kind of in, you know, in a weird spot where, you know, Cam Newton's probably back, but maybe not long term. The Colts, the Bucks, you know, the Steelers. Ben Roethlisberger has maybe has 2 years left. He's coming off a serious injury. So there are a lot of teams that are looking towards the future and trying to, you know, set things up the right way so they can grab their guy.
Very generous with your time. Thank you for coming on and helping us really dive deep into draft season, which we're now about in full swing.
Well, anytime, guys. I enjoyed it.
All right, thanks, Dane. Have a good one, and see you next week at the Combine.
All right, sounds good. Thanks, guys.
All right. Bye. The Buckeye Extra Podcast is made possible by Rosati Windows, Central Ohio's number one replacement window company.
Be sure and subscribe to the Buckeye Extra Podcast in the iTunes Store, the Google Play Store, or on Stitcher.